Chapter 17. The dingy gas station stood on a corner in the industrial outskirts of Ottawa. Erected soon after the Second World War, it was a square steel structure with one island containing three gas pumps that were scarred from years of hard use and badly in need of new paint. Inside the office, cans of oil and mummified flies littered dusty shelves, while the windows, streaked with grime, displayed faded signs advertising some long-forgotten tire sale. Henri Villon turned his Mercedes-Benz sedan in over the driveway and stopped at the pumps. An attendant in grease-stained coveralls stepped out from under a car on the lube rack and approached, wiping his hands on a rag. "What'll it be?" he asked with a bored expression. "Fill it, please," answered Villon. The attendant eyed an elderly man and woman sitting on a nearby bus bench, and then spoke in a tone they could not fail to overhear. 5 gallons is the government limit, you know, the oil shortage being what it is." Villon nodded silently, and the attendant pumped the gas. When he finished, he went around to the front of the car and pointed. Villon pulled the release lever, and the attendant raised the hood. "You better take a look at your fan belt. She looks pretty worn." Villon got out of the car and leaned on the fender opposite the attendant. He said in an undertone, "Do you have any idea of the unholy mess your bungling has caused?" Foss Gly stared back across the engine. "What's done is done. The weather closed in at the last minute and the first missile lost the target. It's that simple."
"It's not that simple," Villon snapped back. "Nearly 50 people killed for nothing. If the air safety inspectors discover the true cause of the crash, Parliament will be in an uproar, demanding investigations into every organization, including the Boy Scouts. The news media will cry for blood after they learn 20 of their top political journalists were murdered. And the worst of it is the Free Quebec Society will be suspected by all."
"No one will trace the blame to the FQS." Gly's voice was cold and final.
"Damn!"
Villon struck the fender with his fist.
"If only Sarva had died! The government would be in confusion and we could have made our move on Quebec."
"Your buddies in the Kremlin would have loved that."
"I won't be able to count on their support if we have another setback of this magnitude."
Gly extended a hand toward the engine as though he was working on it. "Why get cozy with the Reds? Once they get their hooks in you, they never let loose."
"Not that it concerns you, but a government along communist lines is Quebec's only hope of standing alone."
Gly shrugged indifferently and continued to pretend to work on the engine. "What do you want from me?" Villon considered. "No percentage in panic. I think it best if you and your team of specialists, as you call them, continue your cover employment as usual. None of you are French, so it's doubtful you'll come under suspicion. I can't see the percentages in waiting around to get caught. You forget that since I am Minister of Internal Affairs, all security matters pass through my office. Any leads pointing to you will be quietly lost in bureaucratic red tape. I'd still feel safer if we left the country."
"You underestimate events, Mr. Gly. My government is cracking at the seams. The provinces are snapping at one another's throats. The only question is, when will Canada shatter? I know it's coming. Charles Sarva knows it. And so do those English stiffnecks who outspeech each other in that old stone relic by the Thames River. Soon, very soon, Canada, as the world knows her, will be no more. Believe me, you will be lost in the chaos."
"Lost and out of a job?"
"A temporary situation," said Villon,
his tone heavy with cynicism. "As long as there are governments, financial corporations, and wealthy individuals who can afford your special bag of dirty tricks, Mr. Gly, your kind will never be forced to sell vacuum cleaners for a living." Gly gave an indolent twist to his head and changed the subject. "How can I get in touch with you in case of a problem?" Villon moved around the front of the car and clutched Gly's upper arm in an iron grip. 2 things you must remember. First, there will be no more problems. And second, under no circumstances are you to attempt contact with me. I cannot run the slightest risk of being tied to the FQS. Gly's eyes closed for a brief instant of surprise and pain. He sucked in a breath and flexed the bicep as Villon increased the pressure. The two men stood there, neither giving an inch. Then, very slowly, a taut grin of satisfaction began to stretch Gly's lips, and he glared into Vion's eyes. Villon released his grasp and smiled grimly. My compliments. Your strength and dimensions very nearly match mine. Gly fought back an urge to massage the stabbing pain in his arm. Lifting weights is as good a way as any to kill time between assignments. One can almost detect a faint resemblance between our facial features, said Villon, climbing behind the wheel of the Mercedes. Except for your repulsive nose, we might be taken for brothers.
Stick it in your ear, Villon. The belligerence in Gly's voice was unmistakable. He glanced at the old couple still perched on the bench waiting for a bus, and then at the meter on the gas pump.
That'll be 1860. Charge it, Villon snarled, and drove off.